When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, welcome to Who To Be A Terrier. Stephen Chicken here, joined by David Hartrick. How are you doing, Dave?
Not bad at all, mate. Not bad at all. I have just explained off air, but I'll do it on air. My voice is still a little bit all over the place, so if I veer between, like, Isaac Hayes and a 16-year-old schoolboy, don't be surprised, because it is genuinely all over the shop.
Yeah, and similarly, I haven't had a drink for like 18 months, but yesterday I ate, see this big bag of raisins? I ate basically the whole thing, and it turns out that eating that much fibre just before bed is a terrible idea, because I've woken up incredibly dehydrated, as though I've got a hangover. Literally, as I speak, my wife is bringing a cup of tea into the room to help me compensate. There she goes, having a quick wave. And yeah, we're just going to have to push on though, Dave, like brave little soldiers that we are.
Your big mistake there was eating raisins. They are awful.
Dave here doesn't, well, his body doesn't like gluten. He doesn't like hot drinks. He doesn't like, no. What else is it you don't like that brings joy to millions? Anyway, whatever it is.
The laughter of children. But you know how you make raisins, don't you? You just add evil to grapes.
There you go. Huddersfield Town have beaten Burnley in the FA Cup. I know, it's incredible, isn't it? Just not the Burnley bit, just the winning in the FA Cup bit. Yeah, they've come from behind. It was, I think, pretty even first half, and then the second half was all Huddersfield Town. I think maybe the way to do it, Dave, because we had some new and returning players to have a look at in this game, and I wonder if the best way to approach this might be to go sort of player by player and run through the side and give our thoughts on the players who were in action. But first of all, before we get into that, what are your thoughts on the game as a whole?
I thought it was good. We both fancied Town before kickoff, and that's not just a run they've been on. Burnley were there for the taking, really, and Town did everything that was what was asked of them, really. And I think going 1-0 down now seems to be what Town need to get themselves going. And it's a risky strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it plays off. But, I similar to you, I thought it was fairly even first half. But I thought if one team shaded it, it was probably Town, to be fair. And then second half, I thought Town were more than good enough for the win.
Yeah. I mean, I put in my piece afterwards, like, you look at that and you think, oh, you know, if you were looking at it having not watched the game, you'd see the times on the goals and be like, oh, it was a big, big surprise shock comeback, shock victory, 3 minutes from time, Matty Pearson getting the winner. But actually, when he got the winner, it was like, yeah, well, yeah, that's been coming. Like, because, you know, Nick Bilokapic came on after 40 minutes. I don't think he had a single save to make during his whole time on the pitch. They had one that they put over the bar. And other than that, I don't think he's made a single save, which is, you know, I know that Burnley have had a lot of problems this season in general. They're remarkably, despite having played fewer games than everyone around them and won just one game all season, not bottom of the Premier League, which sort of tells you a little something about the shape of the Premier League this year. But, you know, that they also had quite a strong side out. They're still a Premier League side. They've been a Premier League side for a long time. And the side they had out, yes, it's evident from the state of the bench that is literally just all the players they had available. They didn't even fill the bench. And the rest was kids. But it was still, you know, a lot of very recognisable names in there. Some England internationals as well. And Tam were the better side. I think, you know, whatever caveats you put around Burnley, I think you have to praise Huddersfield Town for, you know, not just getting that win, but doing it from behind.
Yeah, I steady. Yeah, to be fair, I think you look at the Burnley side and it suddenly looks like a championship side in waiting. But they are Premier League as it stands. And James Tarkowski, Ben Mee, Nick Pope in goal, Matty Loughton.
He had an awful game.
Yeah. I think they're... I think their midfield is not great, but you know, Jay Rodriguez and Chris Wood, two very competent, proven strikers. So it was a huge challenge, really. And yeah, their bench wasn't great. It really showed the dearth of their squad options. The flip side being that you looked at Town's bench, and Town's bench looked like really strong, like properly game-changingly strong, as it proved. But yeah, I think probably you're right. Probably the best thing to do is go through player by player, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So we'll start in goal and get it out of the way, because Ryan Schofield came in. Lee Nichols was absent with a stomach bug. Carlos Corbrand explained that Ryan Schofield would have started anyway. Nichols would have been on the bench for the cup game. And, you know, I think we try not to let our own biases come into things. But I find it quite difficult to talk about Ryan Schofield in an objective way sometimes, because I think it's been evident for sort of 9-10 months now that he's desperately low on confidence. I've always maintained I think there's a decent keeper in there, but he's not great on crosses. And you can see that he knows he's not great on dealing with those balls into the box. And it's really rattled his confidence over the past year or so. Because remember that he came into the side well before Ben Hamer left last season. And he had a run of games where he was absolutely fine. He had no problems with Ryan Schofield, you know, bar the odd sort of hiccup here and there that you'd expect from a young keeper coming through. And then there's a certain point where he sort of hit a brick wall, Schofield, and his confidence has just been gone. And, you know, we said when the lineup came out, it's a big day for Ryan Schofield. And I think, unfortunately, away to Burnley, as nice as it is to go, right, it's the FA Cup, you're going to get a chance. I think away to Burnley is almost the nightmare fixture for a player who's, you know, struggled in the areas that Ryan Schofield has struggled in. And he struggled in this game, as you might expect, against a very robust Burnley side, unfortunately.
Yeah, he did. And I'm with you. The thing is, I think Ryan Schofield, I think when you dig into his stats and when you look at him objectively, he does a lot of the basics very, very well. So he's got quite a good starting set of skills. But the problem is, like you say, you have to layer that on with confidence. One of the reasons Lee Nichols sort of overcomes the slightly weaker areas of his game is because he's so proactive and he's so confident. He will, you know, he will come for crosses and he will take everything in front of him to get there. And the injury, I thought, was slightly symptomatic of that lack of confidence, because if you come with sort of positivity and properly commit to that, I don't think you get injured in the same way, is the thing. And that hesitancy has cost him. I think we should talk about the goal, because I saw a lot of people on social media saying that he was culpable for the goal. I don't get that at all, because he has to expect Sarr to cut that out,
yeah,
I think.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't know, maybe some keepers would have been, you know, straight out off their line anticipating, but I struggle to sort of blame him to the degree. Don't get me wrong, I don't think it was perfect goalkeeping by any stretch, but I don't think it was his fault. I think no, not cutting that ball out puts him in a horrendous situation.
Yeah, and it had a couple of moments before the goal that were less than convincing. I mean, it'd come for a ball that was sort of a ball over the top, high ball into the box, and Tom Lees had it covered all the way. There was no need for him to come for it at all. But again, it's sort of that trying too hard thing, trying to impose himself a bit too much, and he came and actually cleared Tom Lees out, and he could have quite seriously hurt him. So yeah, I mean, when I say I find it difficult to be objective on him, what I mean is, I don't think there's a player in that squad that I desperately want to see doing well more than Ryan Schofield, because I think he's had a bit of a nightmare sort of last sort of 10 months or so, something like that. And to be honest, I think some of the abuse he gets online and from the stands is pretty disgusting, to be honest, because this is a young player who's come through the academy, and you can see that the issue is confidence. You know, I think there's an argument to be had when a player is like, you know, if a player is just not good enough or not performing, whether the sort of level of abuse he gets from some people is acceptable. But I think especially when confidence is the issue, I just think it's I think it's a bit out of order for people to be so just nasty. You know, like, we'll talk about Bilokapić in a minute, but, you know, he came on, didn't really have a save to make, and you've got people on social media replying to the Town account going, oh, well, you know, he's miles better than Schofield. It's like, can't you just praise someone without having a go at a poor lad who's clearly struggling? I'm not sure what... I mean, we've said for a while that we thought Schofield probably needs a loan out to go and just be out the spotlight, not have the fans on his back. And, you know, it's not every fan. I think a lot of fans probably feel sort of similarly to me, because he's a great lad. But I think he needs to go somewhere, even if it was National League, and just go and be out of the Town spotlight, have a fresh start and different set of fans, and build his confidence up that way.
He needs 90 minutes somewhere where he goes and collects every cross and every throw out go straight to one of his men, and that alone would go a long way to helping him, I think. And yeah, I we've both seen him play for the B team as well, and he is he is, you can see that there is an issue there. So yeah, do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Ben Hamer.
Yeah.
What brought Ben Hamer around and what got him playing again was the behind closed doors games.
Yeah.
You know, like, he had a real issue playing in front of fans towards the end. And yeah, I think there has to be some form of surgery required there, if I'm honest. And the thing is about, how do you say his name? Because I always thought it was Bilokapić.
Bilokapić. So it's
Bilokapić.
I think a lot of people say Bilokapić, but I'm told it's Bilokapić.
Bilokapić, right. Yeah. You'll have to remind me of that, because I've been calling him Bilokapić all this time. So, but I'm with you. You know, like, he came on just before half time, and he did everything okay.
Yeah.
But like, it wasn't like he was, you know, throwing himself at chance after chance and making save after save. He didn't really have anything to do. So, I mean, I certainly haven't formed any judgment on him, because I don't think you can from that game. So
we've both seen him play for the B team, though. He looks very assured. Yeah. He looks very promising. You know, I think
he's the opposite. He is uber confident.
Yeah.
He is almost, to be frank, he's almost a little bit the other way.
I noticed that when I've watched him play for the B team, his mannerisms are very, very similar to Lee Nichols. Like, when the ball comes to him, he's even before it sort of gets to his feet, he's telling the defenders where he wants them to go, and, you know, doing the big point out to the side, the sort of the T shape that you always see Lee Nichols doing and things like that. So, no, great moment for him, obviously, to come on and make his senior debut. You know, he's been away from his family in Australia. He's not been able to go back and see them. They've not been able to come over and see him for like 18 months since the pandemic started, which, you know, I think is, you know, a lot of people not seeing their families, but I think when they're on the other side of the world, it's especially tough, particularly when you're that age. So delighted for him to get that moment. Go on.
He's also, I was talking to somebody at Town a while ago. He's, some of the opportunities he's had in B team games have been the ones that have been at the Town ground. So what's ironic there are, they are the ones that they're not allowed to show on YouTube. Mm. So his family haven't been able to watch him in the sort of slightly higher profile games as well. So, which is a real shame for him.
There you go. So, no, good moment for him. And genuinely, when I did a piece sort of last month about players who will be hoping, you know, who have maybe a chance of going to the World Cup in the winter, and he's weirdly one of them, because when you look at who the backup options to Matty Ryan are, you know, if Bilokapić gets even half a dozen games, I think he's in with a shout. So, yeah, one to keep an eye on, one for the future. The defence, right, well, Matty Pearson got the goal, obviously. So, yeah, I thought he had a really good game. I didn't notice him really put a foot wrong. And as a former Accrington player, he even gave a little bit of stick to the Burnley fans after the game, which was lovely to see.
Yeah, it was just a very Matty Pearson performance for me. Just, you know, like, never really does anything majorly wrong. It's all about sort of safety first, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that in that mix of a back three. And the goal was a good goal, and hopefully he's refound his scoring touch, because after his little run early season, he's actually on the quiet. He's missed a few chances, you know. Mm. He's had a couple of chances from set pieces, so hopefully that gets him going again. But yeah, I just thought it was a very Matty Pearson performance all in. And that, if you don't know what Steve's referring to, he described the Burnley support as absolutely terrible after the game, which was lovely stuff.
Yeah, it gave him a bit of stick. No, to be fair, the Town fans, the question was the Town fans were great, and he said they were. And yeah. He said, you know,
they were as well. Yeah.
Better than their lot, they were awful, he said. But no, they to be fair, the Town fans, I think there's been a few games this season where Town fans have been a bit quiet, but they were brilliant against Burnley. Like, start to finish, they were excellent. So that was great to see. And yeah, weirdly, both goal scorers, it's their first goal since Blackpool away. Caroma and Pearson. So yeah, and I think he had a bit of a hard time convincing his teammates that he'd actually scored it. I don't know if it came across on the highlights, but everyone went running across to Sorba Thomas as though it had gone straight in, which I, watching the replays, I cannot understand how anyone thought that could possibly be the case, because it wasn't curling in by any means. But Pearson had to, was sort of standing on his own, pointing at himself, going, no, it was, that's my goal, what are you on about? So, no, that was good. And Tom Lees, picked up that blow from Schofield in the first half. He ended up playing Rodriguez onside. You know, I think we said Sarr should have cut it out, but it was Lees playing him onside. But I think we'll sort of give him a bit of forgiveness on that, given he'd just, you know, had a big keeper just sort of clatter into his back, and
yeah,
it was good to see him get back up.
But also, he gets the same leeway, I think, on the goal that Schofield does, yeah, in that he's not expecting to have to react there, because it should be cut out, really.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought a decent game. And Sarr, well, you know, I think first half was a bit unconvincing, particularly on that goal, and I was considering giving him a pretty low mark. And then I thought second half he actually had some really good moments. He stepped into midfield well now and then, and just after Sorba Thomas came on, he played a lovely crossfield ball that Sorba then volleyed across the face of goal. And if anyone on the pitch, including Tan, his teammates, had been expecting him to volley that cross straight across the face of goal, then I think it would have been a tap-in. But unfortunately, no one could possibly have read that was what he was going to do. But yeah, I think you and I both, neither of us like Naby on the left of the back three, though, do we? And I think Colwill is clearly the first choice there.
He is, and I think Naby's contract's up in the summer, and I think there's a decision to be made there, because I don't think it's one you... I mean, we'll get into it towards the back end of the season, but I think if you look at the season, you know, Romani Edmonds Green is having, if you look at the season Romney Critchlow's having, I think that you have to make a decision really on all three of them as to what you want to do with them longer term. And I don't, Naby Sarr is really good at certain things and he's not very good at other things, and yesterday was just another example of how in 90 minutes you can basically get every colour in the rainbow from him. And I think it's impossible to shift Tom Lees from the middle, but I do wonder sometimes when they do have an absentee, is it worth, you know, shifting Lees left or right or wherever that absentee is, so you can get Sarr into the middle? Because I do think the middle suits him, where he can commit a little bit more, but he's got more cover. But yeah, you know, I think the honest answer is we basically know everything there is to know about Naby Sarr at this point, and exactly what to expect.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, I think when Pearson's been out, he's put Sarr in the middle and put Lees right, but he won't go the other way if Colwell's out. Which I don't know. I'm sure Carlos has his reasons. I'm not sure I agree with that one, to be honest. But hey, there we go. And at right wing back, Pippa making his first start. Good to see him. He obviously came on against Nottingham Forest, but this is his first start back. And I think a nice, solid performance. The thing that sort of caught my eye, though, with him is I'd forgotten, almost forgotten how quick he is and how willing to track back he is, which, you know, you always think about what Pippa does in attack and you know, him sort of dribbling up the wing or coming inside to number 10, and you almost forget about what he offers defensively. But there are a couple of times where Burnley tried to break from a Town set piece and he was, you know, on the man all the way, every step of the way, getting back, and it's like, oh yeah, he does do that. He's really good at that. But I mean, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I think you see the impact that Sorba Thomas made when he came on and took over at right wing back. He got two assists in 20 minutes, and we'll talk about him a bit later. But I mean, there's a real wealth of options at right wing back with Thomas and Pippa and Rowe and Turton now. And yeah, it's hard to... hard to see how you're going to fit them all into the same side if you're playing as wing backs.
Just do what Gareth Southgate does and just play them all in various positions. I think, it was good to see Pippa back in the Town shirt, and similar to you, it's what he offers you defensively that's where I think what decides the future, really, because I think there's games where you want Thomas's raiding up front, and I think there's games where you want a little bit more defensive solidity. Yeah, it's going to be a bit of a battle, that one, I think, if I'm honest, because Pippa at his best is undroppable, and Thomas at his best is undroppable. So, it's an interesting situation, that one. We have talked about it, and I think we've both written about it as well, that possibly Pippa coming in might see them change the shape a bit and go into something more like a 4-3-3 for some games and have Thomas higher and Pippa playing as a sort of conventional fullback. It was good to see him, and it was good to see that he's not, a million miles off. He's not had months and months off, and it's quite clear he's going to need like 6 weeks to get back up to speed. From that sort of hour or so yesterday, you'd think like two or three more games and he's probably going to be like somewhere near the Pippa we're used to, interestingly.
Yeah, they've taken it sort of nice and easy with him, I think, because the initial prognosis after he had the surgery was 3 months, and it ended up being more like 4.5 that he was out before he was included in a squad. So I think they've sort of learnt from last season, or maybe not learnt from last season. I think they had to play him last season. They've acknowledged that he picked up that injury in the second half of last season. But I think we talked about it before. When you look at the shape of the squad last season, I think they had to play him because they didn't have loads of other options. It was him or Jaden Brown, and when you're in a relegation fight, they had to go with Pippa. But yeah, good to see him back. And in midfield, speaking of returns, Jonathan Hogg back in the side. No sub appearances or B team games for him. Just straight back in, wearing the armband. And just sort of a steady away performance from Hoggy.
Yeah, Burnley away is a game that is sort of ripe for Hoggy, because he's not going to have runners charging past him every 5 minutes. And it was a good game for him to come back into. Like, Dale Stevens, bless him, is not. He's not running the show, put it that way, much as I love him. But yeah, again, just a very sort of neat and tidy hour, wasn't it? We're going to talk about midfield a bit when we talk about the next man, and we've got to talk about Josh Ruffles as well. But it's quite clear what Town's priority two in midfield is, and that's Hogg and O'Brien, and that's not changing anytime soon. So it's good to talk about a Russell, as we will do in a minute, and there's Scott High in the mix, and a lot of people are quite hopeful or dreaming that they're going to bring in a midfielder. But even if they do, again, it's quite clear the starting two is Hogg and O'Brien, isn't it?
Yeah, I think if they were, I think maybe I didn't make clear enough last week that, if they were to bring in another midfielder, I think it would be to play in that role that Holmes and Sonani have been playing, rather than to replace Hogg or O'Brien in the middle. He's obviously, we know what a big fan of Jonathan Hogg Carl Scorbran is, because he'll only give sort of very fulsome praise to certain players, and I think part of that is just sort of he's doing that classic football manager thing where you're managing players' confidence. And I think he's quite keen for young players in particular not to get complacent, so he'll tend not to give them a huge amount of praise. He's always very on message and stay focused, don't lose your focus, you need to keep doing what you're doing. But with Jonathan Hogg, he's obviously he knows that he doesn't need to worry about that, and we know how much he loves Jonathan Hogg, and I think he's an automatic, if he's fit, he's an automatic start for Corbran any day of the week. Alongside him, John Russell, who you and I think Scott High has been quite divisive, I think it's fair to say, and you and I are both, I think, pro High guys, but I think there's some fans who struggle to understand the role he plays, and I think for those fans what they want is John Russell. He is almost the antithesis of Scott High, and I can see this. If it weren't for the fact that it was clearly Hogg and O'Brien in that midfield too, I think you'd end up with a big schism in the fans as to whether it should be High or Russell. I thought he did fine. I don't think he was a bit sloppy at times. He also had good moments. There were a couple of nice balls he put over the top, one for Caroma in particular, and he obviously hit the post just before half time. But for me, he's a particular tool for a particular job at this moment. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think he's not the quickest, it would be fair to say. He's got a good touch, but yeah, he's very, what you get with Scott High is somebody who takes the ball quickly and releases it quickly. That's what he's all about. He's Scott High, I've rarely seen a young footballer play with his head up quite as much. And that's a really good sort of a really positive place to start from. And like, me and you aren't like massive Scott High fans. We're not walking around with Scott High shirts and Scott High tattoos. But what we do see is a young man who's got like bags of potential, and he plays in, it's quite clear that he's played a lot of football at a club that has also got Lewis O'Brien on the books, because he's very sort of proactive in the same ways. Russell is very different. He's more of an old-fashioned central midfielder when he's playing there. The key thing to note is, for the B team, he's not been playing there either. That's not been the role he's in it, been in. So I'm not too sure whether he is a central midfielder or whether he is a sort of Fellaini type forward player to cause chaos, or whether you know, they can play him as slightly more solid either side of a three. I'm still basically undecided as to what type of footballer he is.
It was interesting, and I was obviously paying quite close attention to the shape when they first kicked off, and he was playing sort of 10-15 yards ahead of Jonathan Hogg when they were in possession, so that the shape that they had was I'm not sure how you'd even describe it. I suppose it was almost a 4-3-3 in possession, where you had Chrome would go off to, would stay on the left, Rhodes was up front, Pippa effectively became a winger, and you had Sonani and Russell just behind that front three, and Hogg sort of holding. So it was interesting to see. They almost played sort of, yeah, he played in such an advanced role. And I don't think I'm speaking out of turn to say that you're exactly right. I think that's how they see him, is that Fellaini, Suchek type goal-scoring central midfielder at some point. I think there's a bit of development for him to do in his game to get there. When you look at his goal record at youth level and Accrington, he's not scored a load of goals. So I think there's work to do on that. But, you know, he almost got a goal here. And, I you know, either way, however much we, you know, I almost regret now immediately having said it, positioning it as High versus Russell, because, you know, they are different players for different jobs. And I think should be judged on their own merits. And I thought, you know, for his first start for Huddersfield Town, he did reasonably well. And, you know, he's a player who, I think, whether we agree or disagree, I think seeing fans getting excited about a player who's come in and made his first start is only ever a good thing, isn't it?
It is. And like, a sort of 5 or 6 out of 10 on your first performance in the first team is fine, isn't it?
Yeah,
absolutely fine. And the only caveat I would make, and I'm not trying to be down on it or anything like that, but it's the same caveat I made for Hogg, really. Coming in against a midfield two of Stevens and Westwood, that, without meaning to be rude about either player, that's a Championship central midfield. Yeah. So it was a good game for Hogg and Russell to come in for various reasons. It's just, his pace does slightly worry me, because I think if you played him in a two or even play him in a three against a couple of pacey central midfielders, I do slightly worry about that, and slightly worry about him on the turn. But, you know, these are longer term problems. They're not really problems to sort of go in depth and analyse after a very solid 90 minutes, really, which is what it was. But I'm quite keen to talk about Ruffles.
Yeah,
I'd like your opinion on him.
I've really liked that signing since he came in the door. I think of all the summer signings, when we were sort of going through the analytics and looking at doing our scouting that we always do and going through the stats, out of all the summer signings, because, you know, it's hard to sort of judge keepers and centre-backs in particular, but I think you can do a bit more with a full-back or a forward-looking player. And out of all the signings they made, he was the one who I was like, oh, he's quite an interesting and exciting player. You know, his numbers were really good. In terms of his crossing, he actually scores quite a few goals. He actually scores quite a lot of headers, which I think is probably indicative of his history as a central midfielder rather than as a left back. The Oxford fans would say that defensively he can be turned, you can get him behind him, but again, I thought he had a pretty decent game here. Carlos Corberan, again, I mentioned that he never really singles anyone out for praise, but he went out of his way to mention that he was pleased with what he saw from Ruffles and he thinks he's a very interesting player. The issue we've got, as I wrote in the power rankings, is that being Town's second choice left back is almost like being their second choice goalkeeper when Harry Toffolo's playing there, because he's always fit, he's always available, and I think he's clearly the first choice. What did you make to him?
I really like him. You know, I just think he's a really neat and tidy footballer.
Mm.
And I think you're exactly right. You know, like, am I going to lobby for Harry Toffolo to have a break and Ruffles to start? No, not a chance. But he does feel like a footballer that in the second half of the season they could use a bit more. Because the other thing is, he's quite versatile. He can, I think there's a world where you could play Toffolo and Ruffles together in some games. I think he could do a job for half an hour rather than 3 minutes at the end of certain games as well, if I'm honest. I look at the Town squad and I think he is one of the ones that you look at and you think has probably been underutilised, and I'd like to see a little bit more of him second half of the season, if I'm honest. It's like, there have been times since we started doing this podcast together where we've been scratching around when talking about the Town squad and talking about the obvious holes in it, but you look at their wide options now, you've discussed the right back ones, but also having Rowe on that left hand side who can cover Ruffles and Toffolo, you know, like, Town's wide options, without sort of being hyperbolic, are as good as anybody in the Championship at the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, I wouldn't say that for every option everywhere else on the pitch, but they really have got some proper game changing options either side now. And I think Ruffles, to be fair, I think he'll second half of the season, I hope to see a bit more of him, and I think he can comfortably get up to the same level of certainly be one of the better second choice left backs, put it that way, in the division.
Yeah, I think he was one of the players who had COVID over that sort of opening
and
weekend.
I think he was quite affected by it as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Everyone's affected by it in different ways, and I from what I gather, I think he had it maybe a bit worse than most of the players who had it then. It's a shame as well, because obviously Toffolo was out and he would have, you know, if he hadn't had it himself, he surely would have played there, but probably worked out for the best because it ended up being Sorba Thomas who filled in. So I agree, I'd like to see more of him. I think it's in a way almost a bit inconvenient for him though that Town are doing quite well at the moment. I think for us to see a lot more of him, and you could say this about a few squad players, likes of Russell or you know, younger players as well, that you might expect to see more of them if Town were just sort of comfortable mid-table, and then from March they've got really nothing to play for and you can start looking at options for next season maybe and trying different players. But I think if Town are doing well, I think there's, you know, likes of Ruffles and Russell are going to find it harder to get a look in. But he's definitely an interesting option, and I thought it was interesting that Carlos, out of all the players, you know, out there, sort of singled out Ruffles when I asked him about the, you know, the squad, you know, the different players he'd tried. So, yeah, Sinani as well, putting that cross for Russell with the header. Again, I think a sort of a steady away performance. I think we're starting to see a bit more consistency out of Sinani, not from one moment to the next, but certainly from one game to the next. I think to begin with, he was very either an 8 or a 4, and I think we've started to see a few more sort of 5s and 6s popping in there, which is positive. I think he's working sort of harder and harder off the ball and getting more and more to grips with playing regular Championship football, which is good to see. But I think, yeah, he's doing all right without being spectacular at the moment, I think, Sinani.
Yeah, I didn't actually think he was great, if I'm honest. I think he was, I wouldn't go so far as to say he was a weak link or anything like that, but I think he was one of the poorer players on the pitch yesterday, if I'm honest. But he still did what Sinani does, which is he still managed to come up with a couple of moments of you know, real quality. That's the frustration with him, really, because you know, you know what he's capable of, what he has got in the locker, as they say. And I think that I don't know about Sinani. I'll be brutally honest with you, I still don't really know what to make of him, because when he arrived, the first couple of games, he was just this sort of like uncontrollable shot machine who was just popping up in every position across the front three and just an absolute live wire. He's calmed down a lot, and I think that's improved his game. But I think it's also taken a couple of elements out of his game as well. And I'd like to see him get back to marrying a little bit of the chaos with the order, if I'm honest. Because, as you said, I feel like he's a player who needs those 8 out of 10s every so often to just keep his confidence high. Because some games you can sort of... He's one of them players that some games, 10 minutes in, you know exactly what performance you're going to get from him is the issue. And he needs to just get on top of that, I'd say.
Yeah, I think that sort of, as I say, the big improvement from him has been his work off the ball. I think he's, you know, you can see he's working a lot harder. He's tracking back a lot more than he was at the beginning. But yeah, I mean, Dwayne Holmes, let's mention him before we get to the substitutes while we're on the topic, came on and did what Dwayne Holmes does. You know, he came on and won the ball in central midfield to help create that goal, the first goal. And another bright performance from him.
Yeah, like categorically his best spell since coming back to the club this. And you can see in his body language as well, can't you? He just looks like he's buzzing at the moment, and long may that continue.
Yeah, really enjoying himself. We talked earlier about people getting stick from the stands, and he was one of the players who was getting a bit of stick earlier this season. But, you know, he's come up with the goods in some really important moments. You know, I think obviously Sorba Thomas is going to get the praise for that, for those two assists, and rightly so. But, you know, Carlos went out of his way to say, well, yeah, it was a good impact from Sorba Thomas, but I think all the subs we brought on had an impact. And he mentioned the fact that Holmes had won the ball and then played Sorba in on the way to that equaliser. So yeah, I think you know, I wrote recently that I think Dwayne's quite a unique player in that he can, and to be fair, this is a criticism we had when Dwayne Holmes first came back to the club, was they keep changing his position, he's not getting a run anywhere in particular. Actually, I think we have to say we were wrong and Carlos was right, because I think that's a considerable advantage in Dwayne Holmes' game now. I think he's got used to being moved around and having to play different roles, and Carlos has used him in a variety of different positions, and he's started to play well in all of them at this point.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I still don't think it's a coincidence that he's in his best spell of form, and that's because he's been playing consistently on the left of that front three, or popping up on the right of that front three, so he knows what his role is more. I think his versatility was killing him for a long time, but yeah, he's a very likable footballer as well, Dwayne Holmes, isn't he? It's very, you
good
know,
lad.
Just the way he plays, the way he talks, the way he interacts with his teammates as well. You can see he's a popular member of that squad. So
yeah, wears his heart on his sleeve, doesn't he, Dwayne? I think.
Yeah,
and for better or for worse, yeah.
There's nothing wrong with an emotional footballer at all. You know, absolutely nothing wrong with that at all. So, yeah, I'm sort of pleased he's in this run of form, really. But, you know, speaking of which, we should probably cover Josh Caroma, who
absolutely.
I thought was somewhere... He looked like Josh Caroma again for... Not for the entire game. I thought he grew into the game quite a lot. I thought he started slowly, but it was really good to see him doing Josh Caroma things again.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing it reminded me was Sorba Thomas against Coventry, where not everything he did came off, but you could see that was the game from Sorba Thomas that then precipitated. He had, you know, his little mini revival that he's in at the moment, because not everything he did came off, but you could see that he was just working that extra bit harder, that 5% harder. He was really, really determined, really aggressive, trying to be on the front foot, he looked like a player who was, you could see he was trying to play with confidence, and through trying to play with confidence and sort of, you know, making a conscious effort to have that aggression and that determination, actually manifested that into real confidence and real output. And it was a tap in for him, but he got himself in a good position there, and I thought he had a really, really, really good, promising game. And you and I have said for ages, if Josh Caroma gets that first goal, he can relax a bit more into games and be more of his old self, and that aggression will come a bit more naturally. That ability to sort of drive towards goal and make things out of nothing will come back to him, and hopefully that'll be the case now.
Yeah, we were at Barnsley, and a lot of fans' reaction to Josh Caroma's performance at Barnsley was at least he was trying to make something happen. Whereas I think me and your reaction to his performance was, why does he keep trying to do the same things when they're not working time and time again? I think what was interesting really about this performance is it was going back to basics really, and just doing the things he knows that he does well and not just sort of trying and trying and trying. It was more of a sort of composed, simple performance. And like the goals are tapping, but it's about positioning, isn't it? And it's about sensing the opportunity, and it's about making the run at the right time. A tapping is just not getting your foot on the end of the ball. It's there are a series of things that goes into it. And yeah, it would be no surprise if he goes on a little run now, because he's quite a streaky footballer, as we know. And we, you know, you can only hope that that's the starting point.
Yeah, hopefully so. I think we've said for a long time, you know, he's not in great form, but he probably, out of all of the players in that squad, is the one that you stick by when he's having a poor run, because you know that the rewards, you know, if you do get the rewards out of him, then it's going to be, you know, special things can happen out of him. And I think he's as well a player who sort of needs that run of minutes in his legs, and needs those consistent minutes to sort of keep his physical side of his game up, because I think that isn't necessarily something that comes naturally to him as much as it would to say a Lewis O'Brien or a Sorba Thomas or a Harry Toffolo. I think Kuruma has to sort of work a bit harder to get his body to that level, but he's good to see a good performance out of him.
Yeah, definitely, long may it continue.
And Jordan Rhodes obviously played centre forward. He didn't get any service, did he? I mean, there's not much we can really say about him for this game in particular.
The one thing I'd say about Burnley is, like, James Tarkowski and Ben Mee are two very competent, very, very good central defenders. So, it, that was their one area of strength, really, in the side. So, yeah, it was a tough role. But I'm not clutching at straws, I promise you, but I was just quite pleased to see him just keep going, because he's another one who's had a long layoff. He's had a funny start to life with Town. He's working his way back in. He looked, at the end of that Forest game, probably, you know, completely understandably, he looked like he was blowing out his bum a little bit. It was good to see him put in another 70 minutes here where he looked, you know, decent, looked sharp, never stopped. And Danny Ward is obviously the starting striker. You know, there's no point. That's not even up for debate at this point. But the more minutes they can get into Rhodes, and he's another one who you just feel like when he gets that first goal, it's going to be such a massive weight off his shoulders that he can go on from then.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the incentive. He's not a million miles off 100 goals for Town, I think I'm right in saying. He would join that sort of that small band of players who have got there. He's on 87 by the looks of things in all competitions. So,
well, he's also after the record for the champ overall, isn't he?
Is he? Because really? he's only
I think 20 odd off. I forget who's top. I think he's third in the list, but second is very catchable, and first is, I think there's about 15, 20 goals. So, you know, he's still got half a season here and another full season as a minimum next year to try and go after that. So, yeah, there's plenty of incentive, really.
There you go. It's Billy Sharp and David Nugent are up at the top. Yeah. So, there you go. And I think he is a player who, the way Carlos talks about him, I think Carlos quite likes him as a player. I think he's interested in seeing what he can do. And, you know, we talked, I think, last week about whether there's a possibility to play him in a two with Danny Ward, which we'll not repeat again if we did that last week. But no, I think he's, you know, I can't really say anything about him on this game, in truth. But, you know, I think it was all about getting the minutes in his legs more than anything else, in all honesty, for this game. So we'll see if he can make an impact later on in the season. And then the substitutes. Sorry, I'll put an edit point in there. And then the substitutes we've not talked about, you know, well, we'll go with Danny Ward, I think, because he came on, looked bright immediately, was doing things that Rhodes wasn't doing, but that, you know, that Rhodes isn't going to do. He was much more involved in the link-up. He was much more aerially capable, I thought, when he came on. He gave Town a bit of a target to aim at. And we've sung Danny Ward's praises an awful lot on this podcast, so I guess don't dwell on him. But as you say, I think he's clearly the first-choice striker, isn't he? I think there's maybe not too much more to add on him at this stage, because we've talked about him a lot.
Yeah, and he's earned that place. You know, there was a spell where we couldn't say that, even though we were trying to defend him. But I mean, it's absolutely his by right now. It's good that Town can bring him and Holmes on, and O'Brien, who we haven't touched on yet, and they just come on and just do exactly the job that you want and expect from them, really.
Yeah.
That level of consistency to come off the bench is just it's a real asset.
I hadn't really thought about that, but that's right. I think the four outfielders they brought on all did exactly what you would have expected those players to do. And yeah, I think that's a positive for Corbrand that you know you're going to get that. Yeah, you're right. I think that's a good point. I mean, O'Brien, once again, there's a bit of a trend at the moment where the fans keep giving him better ratings than me. And, you know, I love Lewis O'Brien, so that's quite something. I mean, am I taking him for granted at this stage, do you think, Dave, maybe?
No, I don't think so. But I think it's that thing about we have to be... Dispassionate is the wrong word because we're both, you know, invested at this point. But we're not fans in the same way. Lewis O'Brien is... He's come through the academy system. He's the star man of this team.
Yeah.
It's no surprise that the fans really are willing to give him sort of a half an extra point on emotion alone, is it really? And rightly so.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's clearly their best player. I think if they hold on to him throughout the January window, and I think we talked about this last week, I think the indications are it's hopefully looking more likely than not that they will hold on to him, but we know that things can change very quickly. You know, if Leeds go and get three injuries, they might come back in for him, who knows? You know, you don't know, but hopefully they'll hold
on to him. Like, he's signed his contract now, and the one thing I would say is that if he does go, he's going to go for an amount of money that is probably slightly over the odds anyway.
Yeah.
And like, whatever you think of Town, any player who they get money for that is over the odds, they have to take that. They have to. So,
and they're good at holding out for it as well, to be fair to them.
Yeah.
Like, that we always say that's one of the big things we would praise them for in their transfer policy, is they make sure they get decent money for the big name players they do sell. When you think of Billing and Grant and O'Brien, the way they've held out for fees on all of them.
But gut feeling from both of us is that he's still here in February, so it's not worth discussing anyway.
Hopefully. And last but certainly not least, Sorba Thomas. I mean, 21 minutes on the pitch, 2 assists, and most pleasingly for me, I think, is the fact that it was 1 open play assist and 1 set play assist. And I'm sure everyone's seen the stat by now, but yeah, that's his 10th and 11th assist of the season. And out of everyone in the top 4 tiers, only Trent Alexander-Arnold has as many as that. So yeah, I mean, he's having an incredible season. We're almost bored of talking about it, but we do need to sort of keep in mind what an incredible season he's having. And, you know, to do it against, you know, he played 20 minutes, he was my man of the match. And I think I decided that after about 5. And yeah, I just thought, excellent again.
Yeah, I mean, what an option to bring on against a tired fullback and a tired midfielder that side as well. And he pushed them back. He did, again, he didn't do anything out of the ordinary. He just did all the things we know that Sorba Thomas does, really. And you look at Sorba and the season he's having, and he's the one that you sort of think, well, at the moment, as things stand, Sorba Thomas plays well, Huddersfield Town play well. That's
100%.
More than any other player in that team, really. And I think he's not at the point where he's like sort of, you know, undefendable or he's just on another level or anything like that. He's just like a bag of potential, and he's full of confidence. And yeah, I think the thing with Sorba is he's had his bad spell. He's come back into form now. There's an interesting run of games coming up for Town and for Sorba Thomas, really. So adding the open play assists is the thing that me and you have both sort of talked about, I think, on air and off air. And it was a really nice assist, that one. The weight on the cross and the ball across was absolutely lovely. So yeah, it was good to see.
Yeah, and again, long may it continue, because yeah, as you say, he's just such a game changer for them when he's on form. And I think if I were, you know, we mentioned earlier the battle for the right wing back shirt. Interesting, by the way, we haven't even talked about the tactics or Carlos Corbrand here. I think he obviously deserves some credit. He changed formation again. You know, he said that he felt there were some shortcomings with the 4-4-2 against Blackburn, that he wanted to see if they could do better in the 3-4-3. And obviously they've got the results. So, you know, you can't really say fairer than that. I think, you know, he's having a good spell. If we're talking about individuals or what have you, I think, you know, Carlos Corbrand, Town have been a bit sort of up and down under him. I think they've been more sort of, apart from that extended bad spell last year, I think you'd probably say they've been more sort of up and down in terms of, you know, they'll have a win and a defeat, win-loss, win-loss kind of thing. But They're on their longest unbeaten run under Carlos Corberan. That's 7 in all competitions now without defeat. They're in a very, very good moment here. And, you know, we talked last week about, is there the potential that something special might be happening here? And everyone's sort of trying to keep a lid on it, which I think is correct. But you don't beat, you know, regardless of the circumstances with Burnley, you don't beat a Premier League side in the FA Cup from behind unless you've got something about you.
Yeah, precisely. Like, he still... He still deals quite a lot in extremes, it'd be fair to say. Mm-hmm. It's one thing or the other. But you could see the evidence of what he's learned this year. And it should be remembered, they're still a rollercoaster side. They started really well, then they were really bad, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. But we spoke about it at the time, but they were fortunate because they didn't really suffer for it. They didn't, like, you know, dropped to sort of 18th in the table or anything like that. They were still there or thereabouts, and it's that sort of league this year where if it's just about staying there or thereabouts for as long as you possibly can, and then trying to put your run together at the right time at the end of the season. And like Corran has, there is no denying this season, one of the things me and you were tearing our hair out last year in particular was that it never felt like he was influencing a game after kickoff. It never felt he was changing what needed changing. It never felt his subs were particularly effective. I think over the last month or so, there's no way me or you could accuse him of that
at all.
He's been, you know, the complete opposite of that. We've seen them change shape and move things and deal with issues like 10 minutes into a game, not 70 minutes. So yeah, it's they're in a purple patch. They've, as I said, got an interesting run of games coming up, and Saturday feels like a big game in a packed stadium, a chance to not make a statement in terms of promotion or anything else, but it's a chance to show that, you know, the good times are back and it is going to be a bit more fun again. I just hope they take it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, the fiver ticket against Swansea, you would think it's going to be a big old bumper crowd. And yeah, as you say, the worst thing is you get in a load of sort of more casual fans or people who haven't been to a game for a while or what have you, and then put in a poor performance, you know, that they really could do with, you know, to keep that goodwill going and keep that growing belief growing, could do with a performance at the weekend. But I think every game probably now is a big game for Huddersfield Town, the position that they're in. Yeah. You know, almost sort of the longer this good run goes on, the bigger each game becomes. So that's football, you know, that's when you're getting into the second half of the season. That's how it works. And obviously into the next round of the Cup now. And I think it's... the reason we've sort of gone through player-by-player is because it has been an opportunity for Carlos to have a look at a few different players. And people were complaining about the lineup, and when I saw 7 changes, I was like, oh, he said it was going to be a competitive side and he's made 7 changes. But then you realise that among those changes, it's bringing Pippa back in, bringing Jonathan Hogg back in, bringing Jordan Rhodes back in for his first start since his injury. And it's like, oh, actually, most of these are players he would have been starting if they hadn't been injured at the start of the season. So I don't think it was, you know, I think probably Russell and Ruffles and Schofield were probably the, you know, bear in mind Colwill was out injured, not a serious injury. I think he should hopefully be okay for the weekend from what Carlos said. But, you know, it was all the players that you would have expected to start. So I think the next round gives them a chance to do that again. And I'm going to put an edit point in here because I'll talk about who they've got in the cup. Obviously, you can't react to that, but it's all right. I'll just drop the draw in here. They'll never know the difference. So Barnsley at home, just about the most unglamorous tie you could possibly get, but, you know, all the more incentive to go and try and win it, I suppose.
Yeah, I think they'll definitely win the cup.
And we need to talk about the takeover rumours as well. And obviously reports have come out on Friday to sort of add into what was reported last month about Marcus Evans reportedly having an interest in the club. I think as it stands, I can't really add any more than what was in that Football Insider report, which we also sort of replicated on our website. We've talked a bit about Marcus Evans' background as well. That's on the website if you want to go and check that out. But the club are not commenting on it, basically, one way or the other. And you can read into that what you will. Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be... I think it's fair to say, Dave, it wouldn't be a huge surprise given what's happening with Hill Hodgkinson if they were talking to other investors and at least considering their options.
Yeah, there's not... I mean, anything we say at the moment is pretty much speculation, but it's an evolving situation, I would say. Mm-hmm. The same caveat applies. I'll say the thing that you can't say, which is Steve wouldn't be writing about it if he didn't think there was something in it. I think that a lot of Town fans have got suckered in by a lot of Ipswich fans who he seems to have been an owner down there that you had to have an opinion on. A little bit like Phil Hodgkinson, if I'm brutally honest. He was either okay, tried hard, did an all right job, just didn't work in the end, or he was the worst thing since, the worst thing since sliced bread. He was the sole reason they ended up getting relegated. He was the sole reason why the squad was so bad. He was the sole reason why everything's gone wrong there. He was the sole reason why people don't holiday in Ipswich much anymore. he just seems to have been... It's the nature of his ownership that you just seem to have an opinion. My personal take on it, and I sent you a couple of messages I've had from sort of level-headed Ipswich fans who think that he did a reasonable job, but he just made a couple of bad decisions, really, and it sort of got to the point where he didn't... It was almost like... I think they got to a point that it feels like Burnley are at now, weirdly, which is where it just feels like a little bit of a sinking ship, and at the moment, it almost needs to sink a little bit to start again, really, and to try and build up again. So I wouldn't get too pulled into the comments that he's like absolutely terrible and all this sort of thing, because I don't think he was by any stretch, certainly not, you know, if you just take the basic facts of it. And we'll see, you know, he's like every other, or he would potentially be like every other owner of every football club in the country, in that they all need to have really good people around them and under them who help them out. Because
that was the big failing,
because running a football club is really hard. It's really, really hard for a lot of reasons. So we'll see. Evolving situation. As and when it happens, we'll do something on it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, and that's not to sort of let him off the hook for what's happened at Ipswich, but I think you're right. Like, we talked about this last month, so I suppose we're just repeating what we said last month. But he put nearly £100 million into Ipswich. But when you look at how the money was spent, it's not like they were going and spending enormous transfer fees or masses on wages. They were trying to do things the right way, try to be sensible, try to be sustainable. Very similar to the way that Huddersfield Town, you know, was run under Dean Hoyle. But the difference is, I think Marcus Evans just didn't, as you say, he had the wrong people talking in his ear. I think, let's be honest, that athletic piece, they were talking about how Paul Jewell was helping him pick his next managerial appointment. I was about to say no disrespect to Paul Jewell, but let's be honest, I am being very disrespectful to Paul Jewell. But, you know, I think that you need to listen to the right people. And, you know, I think very few chairmen would go and find a David Wagner, say. You know, I think you need football people who know what they're doing to identify people like that. And I think the two big failings from his time at Ipswich with Marcus Evans was not listening to the right people. The recruitment was really poor, because the thing is that although he put all that money in, that money effectively went to the day-to-day running of the club and just keeping it alive, because they had three big player sales while he was there. One of them was Connor Wickham, who came through the academy. The other two were Aaron Cresswell and Tyrone Mings in particular. But that was sort of for a long spell, those were the only real transfer fees they got for any player, and otherwise everyone was going on a free. So they were signing a load of players, whatever was happening with the recruitment. There were a load of players who they were signing and then letting go on a free and not getting any resale value out of them. So that means that any investment you do put in, it, again, just goes back to the running of the club. And yeah, I think that those are sort of the twin pillars of his failings at Ipswich. And anyway, we'll see how it goes from here. You know, perhaps this will be turn out to be, you know, nothing's done yet, and perhaps talking about this will turn out to be a waste of time. But I think there's lessons for him to learn there, and if there were to be involvement at Huddersfield Town, I think you would hope that he's learned from them.
The other thing is, I think it'll be interesting to see what direction that the club goes in from there, because there's two there's two ownership models, and weirdly, I would say both were tried to a different extent at Ipswich, which is the first is where your sort of manager dictates your club. So you bring a manager in and you go, okay, you look at, like, I mean, it's an extreme example, but you look at sort of Pep Guardiola at Manchester City, where they bought him in and they go, okay, we're going to shape this entire club from recruitment to structure of everything else around our manager.
And they've been preparing for Pep's arrival for years. They literally spent years shape, you know, they got in Bajiristan, etc., specifically to try and to build a club that would entice Guardiola to come and work for them.
So, I mean, we're not linking Town with Pep Guardiola, but who knows? But what we mean by that is, like, you go looking for sort of managers who are going to become the personality of your club, really, and you make the club revolve around them. The other way to do it is, like, a Brighton and Hove Albion, a Luton in the Championship, where you have a model of a club, and you bring people into the various positions that fit the model.
And this is what Huddersfield's trying to do now. That's why they got rid of the Cowleys and got Carlos Corbrand,
That you don't make the model, you don't change the model just because you've changed somebody in a key position. So, weirdly, as I said, I think he probably tried a bit of both at Ipswich, and neither really worked. So I think you have to sort of commit to one or the other and go from there. But who knows? As I said, it might not happen. It may not happen. Let's when it does happen, we can talk about it in more finite terms. But while it's still a maybe, it's difficult to talk about, isn't it?
It is. Right. Brilliant stuff. Thanks, Dave, for joining us, and thank you for to your vocal cords for holding out as well. I didn't notice too much squeaky voice teen out of you there. Do we have anything else to add?
No.
Bye.